Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
The Athletic.
I'm sorry, you can sit there and look and play with all your silly machines as much as you like.
Is Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
Himself 6 feet into the crowd and kung fu kicked a supporter who was without a shadow of a doubt giving him lip.
Oh, I say, it's amazing.
He does it tame and tame and tame again.
Crank up the music, charge your glass. This nation is going to dance all night.
The do's and don'ts of popular football chant, you're just a shit player X. Greece and Britain locked in talks over shock archaeological swap deal. Did it really just have to be Ivan Toney? How many points equal being cut adrift at the bottom? How many gears can a team's performance have? And the eternal caretaker versus interim debate rears its ugly head once again. Brought to your ears by The Athletic, this is Football Clichés. Hello everyone and welcome to episode 114 of the Football Clichés podcast. I'm Adam Hurry and with me once again is Charlie Eccleshire. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Adam?
Very well, thank you. Antonio Conte's touchline theatrics after the win against Leeds on Sunday. I realise this is very much his brand, but is it too early to be trying to make that sort of connection with the crowd, or is it deliberately artificial? I mean, he was quite honest about it afterwards, wasn't he?
Well, I think he says he has this passion and you either have it or you don't, and he does. I mean, my mind went back to the Klopp getting the players to all link arms and go and salute the Liverpool crowd after a 2-2 draw with West Brom, which people, you know, at the time thought was a bit mad. And that was only a couple of months into his time there. So I think you want to stamp your authority early and show what you're about. So, yeah, I mean, it means it'll be tough for him to top that as the weeks and months and years go on. But he certainly set a stall out early, yeah.
Yeah, elsewhere at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, some very curious scenes before the game. It emerged, or it appeared, that Conte had designated some staff to go and trim the technical area grass.
Yeah, so this, all I could think of when I saw this was that this needs to go in the long read either way.
Yes.
Because either Spurs win something and it's the... Even the grass, he wouldn't let lie. He had, that was attention to detail. And of course, if he's sacked early on, then it's the kind of, he just micromanaged too much. I mean, even the grass, he couldn't.
One of your sources will be one of those people on their hands and knees.
Exactly, yeah, yeah, yeah.
What turned out to be artificial turf that doesn't actually grow. But yeah.
So I look forward to post-rationalising it either way.
Yeah, absolutely. Alongside you to pick through the weekend's talking points is David Walker. How's it going?
Very good.
Were you at Vicarage Road on Saturday evening?
I wasn't, no. For the second time this season, I found myself in a cottage in the countryside with some friends for a weekend away, whilst Watford were completing an astonishingly unlikely massive win. So I missed the Everton 5-2 game and then this one. So long story that I won't bore you with, I was there because we were celebrating Thanksgiving because... One of my friend's wives is American. She's over here.
Yep,
so we'll do that. And that was good fun. But I was worrying the whole time ahead of it, thinking, because dinner was slated for 3 p.m.
Right. Yeah.
So I was always thinking, like, how am I going to deal with this? Am I going to watch it on my phone under the table? Notifications? You know, there needs to be
big old dinners Thanksgiving as well.
Yeah, exactly. I needed to be aware of the temperature in the room. Yeah, exactly. But as these things so often do, dinner took longer to cook than we thought. Enabled me to watch the first half. I watched it on a Portuguese stream, which was entertaining. Their pronunciation of Craig Cathcart was particularly fun.
Wow.
But then settled, you know, watched the first half, brilliant, all going well. But then I had to watch this, I had to turn it off for the second half. So I was receiving the notifications on my phone.
Oh, man.
And when Donny van der Beek scored early on, I'm thinking, right, just put the phone down, just eat, forget about it. It was going to be torture. But then obviously chaos ensued. Maguire sent off, late goals, tremendous. I did a toast to Claudio at the table.
Did you not sing "You're Getting Sacked in the Morning" at the table to nobody in particular?
I didn't go that far, no. Oh,
Solskjaer was in fact sacked in the morning.
Indeed.
Would have been tidy if you had sung it.
Did we? Has it been analysed the extent to which this game had everything?
Well,
I mean, which key criteria
I like
did it
the
have?
Fact that it had a retaken penalty and both were saved. That really elevates.
That's pretty spectacular. A red card, a manager. I mean, I don't know if a manager being sacked the following morning is intrinsic to the game, but certainly
I would say no.
But a big team getting beaten well.
Mm. It had a lot. It just had narrative pouring out of every. Yeah. Poor, didn't it? In terms of the players that got sent off, Maguire, you know, hapless Maguire is sort of having a tough time. Van der Beek scoring off the bench, even down to a micro level in Watford land. João Pedro scored 2 weeks after he lost his father, and it was a big moment.
Yeah,
and we, you know, it's everything that happened had some wider sort of implication.
It absolutely had everything. Was it angsty enough? Contretemps, were there?
No, maybe not. Maybe that's one of the only things that was missing. But I mean, it was as close as you can get, I think, pretty much to having everything.
Well, maybe this episode of Football Clichés has everything because we've got so many bases to cover in episode 114. Let's kick off with this one. Very familiar territory for us all. This is via Arjun Gole, who has offered some textbook bargain hunt chat from last week.
I can see where the Art Deco term comes from. It has got that angular look, hasn't it?
It certainly has. Estimate?
Modest, I'm afraid, just because there's too many of them around. Yeah. It's £20 to £30 from me.
Well, they went out and paid £40 for it. So, are you going to be on the podium today?
For my sins.
OK, good luck.
Do you know what, Charlie... You know, at first I thought this is really, you know, textbook use of daytime TV for my sins. But I thought, actually, no, not really, because he just says it and that's it.
Yeah, it's quite a weird usage of it.
Almost like he was doing it for the purposes of getting on the Football Clichés podcast, Dave.
That was my first thought. They're doing it deliberately now, aren't they, surely? The antiques world has cottoned on to what we're doing.
And a narrative slightly undermined by the fact that this was an episode aired in 2019. But still, good forethought.
They knew, deep down they knew.
Yeah, absolutely. But anyway, solid start. This week on players desperate to return to former teams, Dave. Now, we discussed recently the methods by which players declared that they would return under their own steam to former clubs or under, you know, former managers. Football Italia report that Mario Balotelli dreams of a return to the Italy squad for the World Cup playoffs in March and admits that he has spoken to Roberto Mancini lately. I'd return from Turkey by foot.
Well, I've done some research on this. So Balotelli, unfortunately for him, he is playing in Adana, Turkey, which is actually in the south of the country, quite far away from Istanbul. But if he was to walk from Adana all the way to the Coverciano Federal Technical Center in Florence.
Oh, yeah, good choice for destination.
Yeah, that would take him, according to Google, 577 hours, a 2,861 kilometer walk, passing through Bulgaria, Serbia, Croatia, and Slovenia before making his way down into Florence in central Italy.
I guess it's possible, but they may play one of those teams, which would at least reduce.
Good point.
Reduce his journey team.
Like Sunday League. I can just go straight there.
I'll meet you in Portugal if that's all right.
Are you getting a lift? No, I'm going by foot. Yeah, but by foot, it was something very biblical, Charlie. I mean, allowing for translations, which is always sets up any Italian footballer's quotes, frankly.
Yeah, I do. I've had quite a few of them with Paratici and Conte joining Spurs, and it is enjoyable seeing those things translated. Yeah, fair play to him. I mean, I don't know how many games he'd have to miss for his club team for those timings to align, how long it would take him to get there by foot, and whether he'd get the dispensation to do it. But
imagine the club v country row, Dave, as a player.
I've got to leave 3 weeks before.
577 hours, how many days is that?
It's 577 divided by 24.
That's what? Non-stop, what?
24 days.
Right, okay.
Yeah, and yeah, that's walking non-stop.
You'd have to pick him when he gets there, wouldn't you?
We're going to put you on the bench.
Mancini wouldn't. Mancini wouldn't. Or maybe that's the sort of thing Mancini would be impressed by. But I think we've analysed that quite enough. Good luck to you, Balotelli. Now, we're all familiar with the chant, "You're just a shit player X, Charlie," which always something of a cheap shot. And also, you always get the sense that it's not very well researched, this one. It's always off the cuff, isn't it? It's very similar to the you're just a small town in vague geographic region X, which is never well researched, as we've established before. Mm-hmm. But Richard Munro writes in. He says, "I was at QPR versus Luton on Friday night. QPR fans were chanting, 'You're just a shit Jack Grealish,' to Henry Lansbury. Surely the player who the chant is aimed at has to play in a similar position / style to player X in 'You're just a shit X.' Can't just be the hairstyle." I think he's on the right track here.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to unpack there. Also, because often the joke is that you're saying, you know, it would be more to Jack Grealish, "You're just a shit Henry Lansbury," or someone who's not, you know.
Extra level of irony, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Because otherwise, you're sort of, well, there's an element of truth in it, and the humour comes from
almost a compliment for Henry Lansbury. Yeah. Really,
just to be in the same breath, you know. If I have half the career that Grealish has had,
it's actually true. This is really good, Dave. On the aspect of, does the player need to play in a similar role, similar position, or is it just a vibe or a look?
I think you can get away with the vibe.
Okay.
Whilst Lansbury and Grealish are not similar players in style, Lansbury's the, you know, what, central midfielder of sorts, isn't he? But I think that's not the point. I think it is, you know, you've got your hair band, and I don't know whether he's copied the low socks in this latter stage of his career, but I think that's the point.
I think it can be either. I mean, I think, like, either work as... it can be the position, or if they're a similar style of player, or if they look like them.
No, but if it's not, if you take, right, let's imagine that they don't look anything alike. Why would, like?
No, yeah, I agree.
You could say to anyone, like,
well, if they look anything alike, if say Cristiano Ronaldo's United are playing at a League Two team, and the League Two team have a cult striker, I think it would be legitimate to say, "You're just a shit, we've got our League Two striker." In the sense that they're both attackers, and the humour is just coming from the fact that this guy's not very good. We're talking here about, like, one of the best players in world football.
No, sure, but you wouldn't pick a random attacking player from the Championship and just pair him up with a random Premier League player in the same position just because they're in the same position. If there was no obvious... I think visually is the thing, because that's the obvious link.
Yeah, I'm getting Whereas one round
pick,
by this.
If you pick, say, I don't know, like Bradley Dack of Blackburn Rovers and paired him with Scott McTominay or Fred or someone, like, just, you know, just a central midfielder from a decent team, or just Rodri, it's just a shit Rodri, like,
yeah,
it's what's the link? There has to be something visual, I think, or some obvious connection.
You need a few more syllables for a start, so, I mean, this was the first time I'd ever said Henry Lansbury's name out loud, and I'm frankly delighted I did say Henri, because there was a huge danger I was going to say Henri. In my head it was going, go on, do it, but I didn't, and that's the main thing. Now, Richard Munro, we're going to allow this, in fact. In this case, it was vibe-based, and that's fine. Speaking of Jack Grealish, Charlie, his love life is none of our business, obviously. The Sun report, the Man City player, 26, has had showdown talks with Sasha Atwood, 25, over their on-off romance. Showdown talks. I like to think that a few months ago he said, "We'll sit down at the end of the season."
The contract's on the table.
I'm not even thinking about that right now. Showdown talks. I mean, who knows? I mean, what comes next? Is it make or break? Or are they make or break? Are those showdown talks in and of themselves make or break?
They might hit a snag.
Will he be able to talk to other people in January with a view to completing a move in the summer?
I suspect not much would stop him on the basis of that story. But as I say, none of our business. Love this one, though, Dave. The Times report that Greece is set to offer Britain the Artemisian bronze and the golden mask of Agamemnon in a deal to return the Elgin marbles.
Wow.
a proper swap deal. That's tantalising. That's got Britain thinking.
Yeah, I'm not too up on my sort of ancient Greek artifact history.
It's hard to know what the individual values of those are.
Who's getting the best deal here?
Well, but you know what the problem is here? Both parties are represented by Mino Raiola. So he's going to be the real winner, whatever happens. And this is just so typical of modern archaeology.
Well, got a direct line to the head honcho at the British Museum. He turns up for their dinners just wearing his tracksuit, but they let him get away with it. It's okay. Big patron.
Asked if he would be open to talks on an exchange, Greek Prime Minister Kyriakos Mitsotakis said, "We want the sculptures back for good, so we will not settle for a loan." So he's not interested in a loan deal at all. He wants a permanent move.
Was there any like dismissal of offers as derisory?
Oh, I wish it was. That really would have... I would have made the entire episode about this if that had happened. But
the eye-watering Mask of Agamemnon.
I mean, it certainly looks like a good deal to me. You're getting a bronze and a mask just to give some marbles back. I realise I'm being flippant about it. I know they're more significant than that. But, Charlie, perhaps a situation where a literal war chest might actually be useful.
Quite possibly, yeah. I mean, you think if any party was going to have them, then the British Museum may be able to dig out a war chest. But it's going to be fascinating to see how this one develops.
Yeah.
See if anything else is thrown in, and also how much it upsets the balance. If the Elgin marbles were to go back to Greece, you know, we've seen with Cristiano Ronaldo at United... It's not always that straightforward.
It's going to unsettle everybody else.
Yeah, the V&A will get involved.
But yeah, great stuff. Really hope that goes through. I mean, I hope Greece won't be held to ransom, Dave, over this. And that's the final piece of transfer analogy I had to use. There we are. Charlie, this one's for you. Fantastic scenes from a Hartlepool United match programme from 1992. This is via Pool's Photos and Joe McNaughton. Hartlepool chairman Gary Gibson at the time took it upon himself. So angered was he by the player ratings that journalists were giving out, he decided to give journo ratings in the match programme.
Oh, wow.
He said, "Instead of the local journalists giving marks out of 10, I thought we would award our own marks out of 10 for the journalist's performance this season." I'll give you a selection of his... he does them in ascending order, which is quite nice. It really does build and build. First of all, Ray Robertson of the Northern Echo. "I don't think Ray's ever been to the Victoria Ground. Nevertheless, he is the Northern Echo's Hartlepool man. A respected journalist, but his lack of personal appearances has cost him marks. 5. But the great thing about this is it's really done in the player rating style. Great cadence to it. Really like...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Some right early start. Promise and some neat touches.
Stepping it up now, Mike Spence from the Evening Gazette. "A colleague of mine, so to speak, so declaring an interest here, Mike suffers from lack of space. The sports editor really must devote more column inches to Poole if he wants sales to increase in North Cleveland. Consequently, I cannot tell whether Mike is a really good writer or not. I suspect he is." 5.
Just haven't seen enough of him this season.
Yeah, only flashes of flashes.
Let him off the leash.
"Wrote too late to make an impact. 5. Robert, yeah, but he's more effusive later on. Charlie, Simon Turnbull from the Northern Echo. "For my money, the best sports journalist in the Northeast. A wordsmith who will no doubt go far. 9. He's got the world at his hands. Fingers.
So that's a jump. There were ones in between, presumably.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So right, yeah, a few fives, a few sixes, no sevens or eights, and then straight onto the big deals. This is perhaps the zenith of this. Mike Amos of the Northern Echo. "Mike is the governor, a beautiful writer with a gentle, mischievous wit. Mike covers sport in general and football in particular in his twice-weekly Backtrack column, which has unfortunately been interfered with by the general election. If he could play football as well as he writes, we would be top of the first division without a doubt. 10. Wow, Mike Amos.
Brilliant.
What I like about this, I thought it was just going to be like really petty backbiting from the chairman, but he has actually...
Done a proper job.
Yeah, he's really engaged with it and dished out some praise. He's also, it feels like it's as much his attempt to tell these papers how they should operate.
Yeah.
Yeah. An element of that, sort of, yeah, really sort of telling the business how it should operate.
Why did they get rid of the sports column for the general election? Surely there's room for both.
Well,
never the twain shall meet.
Good question.
Don't know, just precious column inches. Dave, I wonder what he would make of L'Équipe's set of football correspondents. Or is this too meta? Have I just added too many layers to this?
Yeah, I think so. I'm not sure Gary Gibson would have been a frequent reader of L'Équipe.
No. What is it about North East chairman called Gibson?
Something to look at.
Yeah, something to look at indeed.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Oh, look at that! That is wonderful!
Brought to your ears by The Athletic. This is Football Clichés.
On to very, very familiar, well-trodden ground for us now, Charlie. We've talked at great length about the That Man phenomenon and its variants. Here's a fascinating case study from Match of the Day. This was Newcastle versus Brentford in their six-goal thriller. Ivan Toney returning to Newcastle and scoring the equaliser to make it 1-1. This is how that was announced on Match of the Day.
A hotel room somewhere in Newcastle that is bouncing up and down and reverberating just at this moment, but he'll be a little concerned because Toney's equalised within, 60 seconds? It just had to be, didn't it?
So how do we feel? I mean, I don't think it was ever going to qualify for a That Man situation because he's not in good enough goal scoring overall or in recent times. But how do you feel about it just had to be? He only played four games for Newcastle, didn't score, and it was 6 years ago.
Exactly. I don't think he had a big enough spell at the club. You wouldn't associate him with Newcastle in that way. In the same way that Josh King scored for Watford against Manchester United, obviously started at Man United but didn't play it, I don't think at all, or if so, hardly at all. So I think you need to be an identifiable sort of spell in your career, I think.
But, Charlie, there is a twist to this. Okay, he may not have met the threshold to have been significant enough first time around to be a it just had to be on his return 6 years later. But can we add a kind of twist to this of kind of the one that got away? Because they let him go and he turned out to be really, really good. So maybe there is a kind of narrative twist that brings it just had to be back into the equation.
The kind of point to prove element.
Unfinished business.
Yeah. And I do think his reaction suggested he was well aware of the significance.
Actually, very good point. I didn't notice. What did he do?
Well, he got his badge and kissed it as if to say, hello, I'm Brentford now.
Okay, cool.
So maybe we're putting too much significance on what we thought. And whilst I have to say I hadn't made that link before the game, for him it was significant. So maybe it did have to be him given how much he seemed pumped up by it.
Okay, so a relatively straightforward case for us to examine so far. But then later on at 2-2, as Ali Maxwell writes in, it just had to be made a very bizarre return when Ivan Toney cleared off the line.
Shelby takes. Phillip gets to it. It's not cleared, though. Goalkeeper comes, doesn't get it! It's off the line by Ivan Toney. It had to be him, didn't it?
Dave, what do we think?
Well, at least it's consistent with his earlier proclamation.
Is it adding to the narrative of it just had to be? I mean, maybe in tandem they can work together quite well, but in isolation, clearing off the line against your old club who you only played four times or 6 years ago, maybe isn't.
Yeah, exactly. I think the two together, they do sort of work.
Because, Charlie, we're well familiar with like a big striker coming back and doing some defending. It's just, who's back there? Only Didier Drogba.
Yeah.
So stuff like that. So in that respect, it kind of works. It's got its foot in the door.
And I guess the commentator almost feels that anything significant kind of had to be him.
What have you got that, sent off?
That seems to be the inference. Even that, it had to be him. Because then, you know, if any player's going to do anything, the biggest narrative, the most interesting thing is that it's Ivan Toney. If we're buying
people.
The fact.
Of all people,
exactly.
He's just not, I mean, he's an incredibly good player and he's obviously a very visible player because of where he plays, but he's not a big character. He's not a controversial character. It's not like Mitrovic coming back with Fulham, for example. I just feel like it doesn't quite meet the threshold, certainly in either incident, nor combined, Charlie.
I guess the question is the extent to which Newcastle fans are really aware of this. I guess I must admit, I don't know. If he is someone for whom fans pine after and think, oh, you know, why did we let Ivan Toney go?
Maybe.
And if they do, then him coming back and scoring and clearing off the line.
Well, they love a number nine up there.
It's like a religion up there, number nines. And he's then depriving them of a goal.
then maybe it did have to be him, because
so
then
borderline.
Then they're going to be discussing it on the way out, like, oh, just, you know, we were just as we were getting over Ivan Toney, he comes and
he comes and
does that,
reopening old wounds. Okay, well, Newcastle have much bigger problems than this, Dave, because they are now bottom of the Premier League table. But as Guy Fraser asks, are they adrift? How many points equals adrift? My first observation on this, Dave, is that Newcastle probably aren't adrift yet. They're 2 points behind Norwich, who are 19th, and they're 5 points from safety. So I don't think in either context are they adrift. Would you agree?
I would agree, yeah. Definitely. And I think, for me, adrift...
It's a very evocative word, isn't it?
Adrift can be... It can be from 17th or 19th, I think, depending... Because you could have all three teams adrift, in a way.
I think you can be collectively adrift. I don't think... Yeah. Can you be adrift in 17th?
So, like, Newcastle could be adrift, even though they might be close to Norwich in 19th. They could be adrift of safety. I think ultimately safety is the thing that you're searching for. And adrift, you know, just the very expression, adrift is what, you know, out at sea.
Out, like, on your own.
You need to be rescued. Exactly, on your own, potentially not even a piece of driftwood in sight.
Yeah. Charlie, I'm not happy about this. I think you can be adrift at the bottom of the table from anybody else, but I don't think you can be adrift of safety.
Right.
If you're close enough to the team above you, you're not adrift. But you can. I would accept, but, Dave, that the bottom three could collectively be adrift.
Yeah, I think that. Yeah. I think you can say, you know, with Leeds' recent form, the bottom three are increasingly being cut adrift. I think that's legitimate to say.
They're threatening to become adrift.
Yeah, I think as a three they are, because whether they're close to one another is sort of meaningless.
Yeah,
you know, they can leapfrog each other, but who cares? It's the safety, that life raft.
It's true.
It's 17th. You know, that's what they're... It's like if three of you are swimming around together desperate for a life raft, it doesn't really help if you've got each other. You just need that raft to be brutal.
Yeah, yeah. It's like Titanic, isn't it? At the end of Titanic.
Exactly. Mm. But I think in this specific instance, no, they're not... They're not at that point yet.
Okay, fine. So what is, Dave, the minimum threshold for adrift? And no matter how you define it on a technical level, I'm saying 6 points, like two wins plus goal difference.
I think even maybe longer than that, because if you're... People forget about that crucial point, as you just said, the potential for wins. Because if you look at 6 points, you might think, oh, 6 points, that's, you know, it looks like a big gap on the table.
It's just two wins.
All of a sudden, but if you just win once, then you're only 3 points.
Oh, yeah.
And you're right back in it.
Yep.
So I think you need, I'm saying sort of 8 or 9 points for me.
Would you take 7 plus a big goal difference?
Yeah, the goal difference is like an extra point.
It's like Britain and Greece.
Yeah.
Negotiating for the...
But I still think, if it's 7, down to 4 gives you a bit of hope. It's close.
Yeah, 4 is basically 3, isn't it?
Yeah. So yeah. I'm going to say 9 points.
Okay.
But that's why as well, I think that's why it is quite a good caveat, they're increasingly at risk of being cut adrift, because that's leaving yourself a little bit of wiggle room for the fact that they could, if they arrest the decline soon, they're not, but they're getting dangerously close to cut adrift territory.
Mm. And of course, the longer it goes that the bottom three don't get cut adrift, the danger increases of someone getting sucked into the relegation battle. Just one of those things that people say, but it's a little bit like people say, well, it's looking like 41 points this season.
How do you know this?
What calculations have you made? No, you're just saying it. Oh, it looks like 41 points to me this season. It's going to be enough to stay up.
Increasingly as well, there's been a thing about teams sleepwalking their way to relegation. And I feel this is quite a modern phenomenon, but it's the team that's sort of been bobbing around.
Only one team can do that first season, I think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, 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 exactly. And there aren't that many examples
Who's
of
doing
it in
that
Premier
this
history.
Burnley, I think.
Uh-huh.
Because
no,
they're in
no,
the bottom
no.
three. They're in the bottom
but
three.
But they're there already. I think the sleepwalking is more a team that has done, like Southampton last season. They were a team that were top in about November. And then all of a sudden, in March or April, they're actually 7 points above. If they're not careful, they are going to sleepwalk to relegation.
But I see what you mean. Yeah, I take that example. But the sleepwalking thing can be over multiple seasons. So that, you know, they're just always down there. They're just sleepwalking their way. You know, like Sunderland.
How can a Watford fan know so little about the culture of relegation? This is actually sensational.
Villa
you
and
can't
Sunderland
sleepwalk across seasons.
Yeah, you can, because you're not waking up.
No. You're sleepwalking
just
towards
there.
Something, and that's relegation. And I would say that sleepwalking towards relegation is like a team who don't have the stomach for the fight. They're a footballing team, but they're not winning, So they're kind of in denial about the situation they're in. That's, to me, what sleepwalking towards relegation
means. Yeah, but I think if you're sleepwalking, a team like Sunderland could have, they were sleepwalking, but they kept waking up just in time. But eventually they're going to sleepwalk and they're going to walk into the middle of the road and get run over.
Okay.
Yeah, I
but that's
think
not it's, sleepwalking it, across several seasons. That's different incidents of sleepwalking, self-contained. Surely you can't say that they you can't.
They've been asleep for that long. No, I know what you mean. I think that is a thing. And yes, Sunderland is an example of that. And you could say Burnley now. But yeah, I think it is more that Southampton last season. And I think the issue, what people are saying is with Southampton last season or this season, who knows who it will be in the second half. Maybe Palace will go on a bad run and, you know, after a loss, we can say they're 7 points off. It's that sense that they need to become alive to this.
Mm, they need to wake up and realise they're in a scrap here.
They're in a scrap, exactly.
I feel like Charlie Eccleshare. but no, Southampton are very sleepwalky. Derby in the Championship, they're adrift, right? I mean, artificially so because of the points deductions, but they're 15 points from safety and 11 points away from the team above them in 23rd. So they're adrift. I think that's fair to say.
Yeah,
but that's
absolutely
an extreme case.
Completely.
In November.
Lost at sea. They are cast away.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Oh, look at that! That is wonderful!
Brought to your ears by The Athletic. This is Football Clichés.
Okay, moving on. This is from the Etihad on Sunday. A case of stadium announcers perhaps going above and beyond, Charlie. This is from George Gompertz, who says, to be fair, it was a belter, but can we really forgive this?
And had the net not gone in the way, that would still be travelling. 2-0.
Well, I think he's been the best player on the pitch so far, Rodri. It's a brilliant hit from Rodri.
Now, all four teams trying to stamp their own mark on this sort of thing, but stadium announcers describing the goal and reacting differently to different qualities of goal. How do you feel? Shouldn't get involved.
It's a slippery slope.
Mm. Dangerous precedent.
Yeah, we love the enthusiasm, of course we do, but you know, do we want the passing judgment on goals?
I mean, as Charlie says, Dave, this opens Pandora's box of stadium announcement because, you know, a lot of Man City goals are tap-ins from cutbacks.
Mm. And it's another tap-in at the back post, but, well, they all count.
The simplest of tasks for Gabriel Jesus! If a stadium announcer ever said simplest of tasks, I'm hanging up my microphone because that really would be the end. But as it stands, Charlie, if we keep it at this sort of level, we're okay, do you think? Big goals.
Just about, yeah. I mean,
you're not Soccer Saturday, mate. You know, just do your job. Do your job.
Yeah, just vote. Yeah, exactly. Just get the basics right.
Agreed.
Then maybe.
Agreed. Elsewhere at the Etihad, Isaac has pointed me towards some very confused commentary on Radio 5 Live, Dave. This was Rob Green and John Murray trying to thrash out just how relaxed Manchester City were looking.
He's been brilliant at times in patches, and realistically, I was just wondering what gear were you would reckon they'd be in to win this game at 2-0. It's kind of, they've not been full throttle, have they?
How many gears have you got?
Oh, mine's a 5.
You've probably only 5. I thought you'd have 7 or 8 in yours. I would say, In a conventional 5-gear car, it's been about 4th gear, hasn't it? If that.
I'd have said a 3, yeah.
If you could have a 3.5 gear, that's what they'd be in. Here's Bernardo Silva.
Now, lots to unpick here first, Dave.
I mean, far be it from us to criticise an overly analysed, overly literal metaphor. But
my heart was hugely warmed by the whole thing. Let's take the lowest hanging fruit first of all. Really nice, Dave, to see some car related banter between commentator and co-commentator, going the right direction as well. The inference that Rob Green, as a former footballer, had an eight-gear car.
Have some sort of Maserati or something. Exactly. Really good. I've seen what you drive.
So that was bang on, perfectly textbook. But as for the wider debate, Dave, I mean, I feel like fourth gear should never appear in the conversation for this. Fourth gear is a good gear to be in.
Yeah.
That's cruising. That's really good. But cruising in a spectacular way.
I'm quite glad we're getting into this, because the gears thing, I suppose maybe is I'm a non-driver, so I'm a bit detached from this. But I do find that we do need to adjudicate on the what gears mean what, because there doesn't seem to be a fixed sort of standard to me. They've only just got out of first gear. They're not got out of first gear today. They're in top gear, fifth gear, third gear.
But you never hear fourth or fifth gear,
never
really.
Never hear fourth.
Yeah, never hear fourth. I also don't think you'd hear fifth, because I think you might say they never really got into top gear. You'd only talk about a sluggish team or about a team that
when this team
had only
hits top gear, they are
exactly
unstoppable.
Yeah. That's or they it, didn't. Yeah. They didn't even need to hit top gear.
That's it, isn't it? You hear that more often. It was a bit closer there, but City had a few. They could easily have stepped through the gears if they wanted to.
I wonder if the problem with fourth gear, Charlie, is that it's a little bit like saying a 4-star performance when a team wins 4-0. It's basically wrong, and it doesn't reflect the commanding nature of the win. So fourth gear is almost redundant, because it's very hard to squeeze into an analogy for a team's performance.
It's just a very weird, I can't really...
Playing really well, being all over a team in an effortless kind of way, but still only winning 2-0? Is that fourth gear?
Yeah, I guess.
But then scoring goals shouldn't be the gear. It's the nature of the performance, right?
It's how sort of engaged you are and how pumped up and that sort of thing. I just don't think you'd use that analogy for that kind of performance. There'd probably be other things there, wouldn't there?
But you said there about cruising. Yeah, so the idea of being in fifth gear, it would be assuming, you know, you're sort of as fast as you can go on a motorway or whatever, you're cruising along, you're in fifth gear, which doesn't always translate to what we're talking about in terms of football. Like a cruising performance would often be talked about as not getting up to fifth gear.
Yeah, fifth gear isn't that big a deal.
But I can sort of see Gary Neville, like in the first 10 minutes, going, oh, City are going through the gears here.
Yeah, like, going through the gears, very much a thing. Yeah. Very interesting. This is my official adjudication on how gears should be used in football. First gear, teams are never in first gear, but you can't say
can't
that
get
they
out of
barely
it.
Got out of first gear. I think you can say the same about second gear, and at a push, you could say, well, they barely got out of third gear today. Third gear is probably the maximum gear you can be in, because after that, it's just top gear. But this is where the language gets a little bit more creative. So first, second and third gear are the only gears you can really have. Fourth gear, as we've established, does not exist in football. Fifth gear is just top gear. But, Charlie, you can have another gear.
Yeah.
I think they need to find another gear here.
Yeah, they've got another gear.
Yeah.
They've got another gear if they want it.
You just sense they've got another gear here.
There's the thing as well of stalling, which is used obviously on a kind of macro level, but, you know, a title charge...
Careers can stall.
Torques can stall.
So that's like a moped, isn't it? A bike. A dirt bike.
Or you can kickstart a car, maybe.
Can you?
Jumpstart.
Is it? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You can't jumpstart anything in football, can you? You can't jump. No.
No,
it's just kickstart.
No,
I think that
no.
would be not without an investigation from you know, you'd find yourself in CAS pretty quickly. I think you jump
started. Are you what is this a doping thing? Is that what you're suggesting?
Or just a general underhanded?
Oh right, oh an injection of cash.
Yeah.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah, financial fair play.
What about cruise control?
Cruise control, I like.
Yeah, you can be in cruise control.
You can use cruise control if Tony Kroos has scored the goal to put a team ahead at halftime. In a game on Sky.
Yeah.
Cruise control going into the adverts. Anything more to say about the gears? Use
about
of gears
cars.
In football?
But it is a big thing. I mean, like cars and it's such a big overlap. In the driving seat.
Yeah. Rolls-Royce.
Rolls-Royce. Mm. He's been a passenger. Yeah, there's lots of... take the handbrake off.
Oh, of course.
The name of one of the Athletic stable of podcasts.
I mean, it's parish.
It must be up there with things like golf and boxing...
Car crash.
Car crash, yeah, for most analogies. Put the skids on.
That feels so old-fashioned. It feels like, put the skids on. What does that mean? What does put the skids on mean? What context are you using it? On someone's title charge?
Yeah, put the skids on their title charge. So it's kind of checking their momentum. So I guess it's like putting a banana skin or another road-based...
What? That's Mario Kart. That's not road. That's not real cars. Yeah,
Mario Kart is on a road. A potential banana skin. You're gonna drive and slip on a banana skin.
After all of this, the fact that we just got to use the phrase put the skids on in a serious context and talk like a newspaper is just frankly wonderful. This podcast really is a blessing sometimes. Some might think this next item mundane. I feel that's like an important technical point. Games in hand, Dave. Nick Martin writes in and says, I heard on 5-5 Sport, not to pick on them today, Manchester City versus Everton being described as City's game in hand over Chelsea and Liverpool. Can we please put to bed the notion that any game later in the same round of fixtures can ever be described this way? Open and shut case, this, isn't it?
Completely. Not a game in hand at all. No.
Nick Martin really wants to clarify this. He says, only an actual postponement until a date qualitatively later than that of a Friday-Monday weekend or a Tuesday-Thursday midweek time slot renders the game to be in hand. Thoughts welcome, as long as they are in agreement with mine. Thank you. He's bang on, isn't he, Dave?
Completely. Because what you need is for the weekend's games to be over, the league table to be looked at mm-hmm. at the end of Monday Night Football, and there to be a team, you know, in the title race that is maybe behind, but of course they've have played one less, they do have that game in hand to come.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it shouldn't ever be referred to as a game in hand, but you can talk about the dynamics of playing at different times in a weekend.
The phrase you use instead of game in hand is they've still got the visit of Chelsea to come.
They're second, but they have played a game less. That's acceptable, because that's just factual. Or they're top, but they played a game more than their rivals.
It's close to game in hand territory to me.
But on Saturday night, I think you have to give, on match of the day, and this, you know, at the end of it, you're saying, and look, they're second. Yeah, sure, you know, they've played a game more. I think you have to acknowledge that.
No, I think you would say, but of course, City do play tomorrow. City are still to play this weekend.
Chelsea 6 points clear, of course, but City are still in injury time at home to Everton, and of course, 3 minutes left there, and they still have that in hand. Doesn't work. You've got to be fundamental about this. Got to be absolutely fundamental about it. So games in hand. Nailed down. I want to finish with some Solskjaer-related chat, because his departure from Manchester United, Charlie, has opened up a debate about what counts as caretaker and what counts as an interim manager, because Manchester United have kind of created this kind of Russian doll situation with their managers. Michael Carrick is in as what they're officially terming an interim role, but that's just a fancy word for caretaker, isn't it? Because caretaker, is, as much as we throw it around, is never going to be an official word for a manager.
No, and I wonder if it ever was, because there is something that feels quite sort
is it
of
ever
school
in this
care.
Story, it would ever appear in a caption underneath someone's face.
Oh, I think it would have done. Well, yeah. I think it would have done back then, but I don't know if the clubs themselves, in their kind of communicado,
serious way now.
Official,
yes.
Yeah, I don't know. But maybe back then, when things were taken a little less seriously, they might have done.
Do you think they would ever capitalise caretaker?
Oh, absolutely. Caretaker head coach, all three words capitalised. Yeah, I think interim is just a more self-important modern way of describing this.
But I think there's a more technical level we can go to here, Dave. Carrick is, in essence, the caretaker. He is holding the job until they get someone in for a specified period, either permanently or indeed as an interim. An interim manager is someone who is hired for a defined period, a discrete period of time, usually until the end of the season. And he knows it, just like Rafa Benitez was at Chelsea.
Oh, David Pleat at Spurs in 2003. Exactly.
Yeah, it is defined, isn't it? An interim is more defined. It's more official.
Yeah.
It's more business-like. It's more sort of corporate speak, isn't it? Yeah. Whereas caretaker, you just think of the bloke who lived in that weird house in your school playground, didn't you? That's what I always think of when I think of a caretaker. Like Tony Parks having a little house in Ewood Park.
Tony Parks is immediately where my mind went.
The ultimate caretaker.
With a big set of keys.
Yeah.
Do anything.
Les, mine was called. I always think of Les as well.
Yeah, it's a very, very caretakery name, isn't it?
Yeah.
I can't think of a more caretaker name than Les.
Les is spot on.
Yeah. Anyway, fantastic episode of Cliché today. Bargain hunt chat, Mario Balotelli returning to Italy by foot. The precise definition of you're just a shit player X. Ancient Greek swap deals, Journo ratings. Charlie, I bet you're worried about Daniel Levy publishing.
Yeah, I would love to see that.
Alistair Gold getting 10.
You know, but that's the sort of thing where if you did get a high one, you'd then be like, well, it shows I'm not doing my job well if I'm not upsetting the powers that be.
I love the idea of this. I'd love to see more of it in the modern day. That man, Ivan Toney, teams being adrift, stadium announcers going above and beyond. A very, very long debate about the gears on cars, Dave. Enjoyed that. What a highlight of the episode for me.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, got an episode in hand. That is, we have one coming up. And thanks to you both for joining us. Cheers, Dave.
Thank you.
Thanks to you, Charlie.
Thank you. Football Weekly have played a game less, so let's just bear that in mind.
We'll see everyone later in the week. Bye-bye.
The Athletic.